BBC Scotland. BBC Scotland and Creative Scotland present a Salon Pictures, Two Rivers Media and Millhouse Films production. Made in association with Abacus Media Rights. A film by David Whitney. An immensity of thick green jungle shrouded in fine mist. Antioquia Province, Colombia, June 3rd, 1989. A wounded man in camouflage fatigues crawls slowly and painfully through the undergrowth. He breaks down and sobs in agony.
The pain I had was excruciating. Every time I breathed, there was pain.
He lifts his head and checks over both shoulders.
I was very aware we were in Pablo Escobar's area. A nightmare scenario. What happens if Escobar's men get me? But the main thing was the pain.
After rolling onto his front and trying to move forward a little more, he lies on his back and winces in extreme pain.
What was I going to do? Think about your morale.
I swear no more.
The Catholic prayers came out. I said, give me the strength to die with an element of honour.
The man lies curled up and panting on the floor of the jungle, with blood trickling down his face.
I lay there thinking, how the fuck did I get myself here?
The man wipes his face, then grainy footage of an explosion. Killing Escobar. A street reduced to rubble, then a man with blood on his face.
This was the work of the Medellin drug cartels.
Archive footage of cocaine being poured from a bag, dead bodies on a tiled floor, a shattered car windscreen, coffins being carried past a large crowd, and police investigating the scene of a bombing. Colombia, 1989.
A bomb has exploded in the capital of Colombia, Bogotá, killing 35 people and injuring around 200.
The explosion devastated the headquarters of the country's security police. The main suspects are Colombia's drug cartels. But the most prominent cartel bosses have escaped. One, Pablo Escobar, just minutes, the police say, before they raided his hiding place. On Sunday, presidential elections take place. Three candidates have been assassinated already. The cause, the unending drugs war.
Central to the conflict is Pablo Escobar, leader of the Medellin cartel and Colombia's most feared criminal. Cocaine dealing transformed him into one of the world's richest men.
Steve Murphy, US Drug Enforcement Agency, 1987 to 2013.
When you look at Pablo Escobar and the size and scope of his organization, he's the largest cocaine manufacturer and distributor ever in the history of the world, responsible for as much as 80% of the cocaine in the world. Think of that, 80%. Initially, there was an alliance between the two cartels, Medellin and Cali.
Gilberto Rodriguez Orejuela, Miguel Rodriguez Orejuela.
Cali cartel controlled cocaine distribution to New York. Pablo Escobar controlled the Miami area. Then Cali started trying to get into Miami. Pablo was trying to get into the New York markets.
Firefighters tackling a blaze.
The war started, and it was so vicious that the Cali cartel tried to bomb Pablo Escobar's building. They placed a car bomb at the base of that apartment where Pablo Escobar's family was based. Bomb detonated, everybody was fine, but the retribution that Pablo Escobar took on the cartel was vicious.
A corpse's feet sticking out of a body bag. El Ñangas from the Medellin cartel. In the cartel, I was Pablo's hitman. I was with him throughout the war we started with the Cali cartel. Miguel Rodriguez and the Cali cartel had a number of pharmacies here in Colombia. I blew up many of those pharmacies. Unfortunately, it was a very cruel war. A pair of shoes poking out from beneath a blanket on a charred pile of rubble. Cali, Colombia, January 1989. A bustling street market, then the exterior of a hotel. Cali cartel security chief Jorge Salcido Cabrera.
I was invited to a meeting with the Cali cartel. Gilberto Rodriguez told me in 2 minutes, the reason you're here is we have a terrible enemy, Pablo Escobar, and either we get rid of him or he gets rid of all our family. What they wanted from me was to put them in contact with some of the ex-SAS forces that were retired in England, to which I had access.
1989, I received a telephone call from Jorge Salcedo Cabrera. I said, "What is it?" He said, "We want you to work for some businessman in Cali." The mission was to eliminate Pablo Escobar from the Cali cartel's lives. Kill Pablo Escobar. And I knew just the person for that role.
You don't get asked to assassinate Pablo Escobar unless you've got the right experience.
Put that back in your name! Angola, 1976. Footage of armed troops firing their weapons and advancing across a grassy plain. A passport photograph of an intense-looking, moustachioed man by the name of Peter McAleese.
I went to Angola because I wanted to get into action.
Angola, divided and at war with itself, has collapsed.
For us, the Cubans or the Russians have no right to kill Angolans. We have to get aid from anyone who will help us to defend ourselves.
There'd been a total of about 200 British mercenaries involved in the war. Were paid to fight against the MPLA, the movement which won the civil war and which now runs Angola. We interviewed Peter McAleese, commander of all the FNLA mercenaries in northern Angola.
What I want is the public to hear the other side of the operation, see the good side and see the bad side, and to let them judge for themselves.
I was young, I was fit, I was aggressive. Although I disliked communism, it was never a personal thing with me. It's just they supplied most of the enemy at that time. The communist plan for Africa was to go across the central belt and then start proceeding north and south. The west back to FNLA and the eastern bloc back to MPLA. I wouldn't have wished it on my worst enemy. It was a nightmare. The place was in a state of breakdown. And there was a lot of money and arms changing hands.
Why shouldn't we fight against communism, whether it be for money or for a cause we believe in?
I first met Dave Tompkins in Angola. He'd never been a regular soldier. But what I did notice about him, he was extremely brave.
I've had a whole host of jobs in the security business. Defence equipment, and I was the guy who would get you anything, anywhere. Bombs, missiles, artillery rounds, in the millions and millions of dollars worth, to Iran, Iraq, PLO, you name it, I shipped it.
He liked to sport a large medallion he had around his neck. A bit suave, a bit debonair. He was always well coiffured, you know.
My first impressions of Peter were, I was impressed with him. I was impressed with the way he handled himself, moved. He wasn't flash.
We just gelled as soon as we met.
February 24th, 1989. A jumbo jet takes off.
Dave said, are you interested in a job in Colombia? And I accepted. I could not resist the challenge.
Peter and I flew from London to Cali.
The airport in a reconstruction. Dave Tompkins.
We were met by Jorge Salcedo.
We called him George. He also had a code name that he liked to use called Ricardo.
How are you?
Very well.
Nice to see you.
Let me introduce you. Peter McAleese.
Pleasure is mine. Come pay me.
We could tell that Jorge was definitely somebody within the system because he walked us straight through customs, immigration, and there was no hold-up whatsoever. I felt that the mission had been sanctioned at the highest level.
At that time, I knew everybody. I had no problems in getting them through customs. It was immediate. And that power came from the Cali cartel.
I had a video camera and videoed everything. They took us to the outskirts of Cali to a private sports center that was owned by the cartel.
How was your flight?
Top of the range, thank you very much.
And in a rest area there by the pool, having lunch, was the four Cali cartel leaders. And that's where I had my negotiation.
We represent a group of highly skilled soldiers, the best in the world.
I charge per month, per person, plus bonuses, plus expenses, plus all found, everything. Money was not an object for them. They had billions.
Peter is our main trainer, and he was with the SAS.
And then it just went a bit quiet, and it became a bit more intense. It was almost like it'd been orchestrated, and one of them leaned over.
He stares at Peter.
And he said to me,
can you kill Pablo Escobar?
Peter leans in close to talk to the cartel leader. Then black and white footage of Escobar wearing a crash helmet.
The morals of killing Escobar? I didn't have any conscience about it. How can you have morals when the American government's got $1 million on his head? The Colombian government's got quite a bit on his head.
100 millones de pesos.
Pablo Escobar Gaviria, el padrino.
The guy was a threat to the government, the way of life in Colombia, although he was kind to a lot of people in Medellin. But the fact is, he upset the balance of power within Colombia, and he had to go. Think about the heartaches that he caused by some of the people that he killed.
The remains of a crashed plane.
He put a bomb on a commercial airliner because he thought there was going to be a presidential candidate on that plane, and the presidential candidate wasn't even on there. So 110 people died because Pablo wanted to impose his will on somebody else.
You can't really moralize me something like that. I've never looked upon it as murder. I've looked upon it as a target. I've looked upon it as, you know, you could say, well, that's a cop-out. It's not a cop-out. It's genuinely how I feel. Thou shalt not kill. You're in the wrong business, because that's what it's about.
A photograph of a young, clean-shaven Peter wearing his military beret while light streams in through the window behind him.
The actual act of killing someone when you're a professional soldier and you're on a mission is part of what you have chosen to do in your life.
A photo of Peter as a young serviceman.
I was a bit nervous the first time I killed anybody. I was in the SAS. I was posted out to Aden in 1967. That area is now called southern Yemen. We were in a camp called Habilin, and it was constantly being mortared and shot at by dissident rebels. Our task was to go and try and get rid of these men. We moved up to this area where we thought there was a group of shepherds there. As I looked at them, something clicked in my mind and told me these guys are not shepherds. It was pretty dark. I spoke to one, he stood up, and he shot Dave Haley, who was the troop sergeant. And I immediately turned around and I just blutered him. I fired a round into his stomach. He stood up and he straightened up, and I put another 5 into his chest and he slid down a wall.
A photo of Peter escorting a prisoner.
I felt really that I'd proved myself as a soldier. I felt proud that I hadn't failed in battle. In the eyes of some, it may be morally wrong. But then again, that was a profession I chose.
Peter points at himself, then sits back in his chair. Night has fallen over the dense jungle in Antioquia province, Colombia, on June the 3rd, 1989. Lying on his back on the leafy forest floor, Peter's eyes blink open. Then he takes a deep, tremulous breath.
The first night I was cold. And I found a can of beans in my escape bag. And I found some hexamine blocks, which the British Army used for cooking.
Peter lights a fire and dents the can of beans on a rock.
And when the can inflates again, you know the food's cooked. It was beautiful.
Peter picks up the can and eats some beans through a hole in the tin. Then he wipes his mouth. His head is caked with dried blood.
There was a fear that Escobar could send people to kill me.
Peter looks up at the tops of tall trees in the pitch black night sky. In the present, he puts his head in his hand.
On the hill there, lying alone, I had some vivid dreams. And this dream was Angola. There was a guy bent over a bush, and somebody had shot him in the back of the head, and his brains had come out, and he was still holding the bush. Man's inhumanity to man.
Peter lies wounded and shivering in the dark. 3 months earlier, video camera footage from the inside of a plane as it taxis along a remote runway.
The Cali cartel was very confident that they could kill Escobar when he had one of his usual parties in his ranch. So the details were to be carried by the British.
Footage filmed by Dave Tompkins.
We will target Hacienda Napoles. We'll wait for him to come there and you'll have to tell us when he is. You'll have to put your spies into action, the police and the military. And they said, good idea.
The plane climbs into the air.
I wanted to do a fleet recce, the reason being, I wanted to know what the ground looked like, because that is where we were going to strike.
In an animation, the plane flies from Cali to Hacienda Napoles, which it begins to circle.
Hacienda Napoles was Pablo Escobar's pride and joy. He loved that finca. It was about 10,000 acres. He had a zoo where he had all the exotic animals of the world in there. I remember the elephants, the giraffes, the famous hippos.
A museum where he had Al Capone's car in. And he bought all kinds of things relevant to gangsters.
He built an airstrip where his drug trafficker friends would come in to negotiate. He had sicarios guarding that finca.
When we were in the air, I looked down at Hacienda Napoles, and then I realised that it was a lot easier than I had actually thought in the beginning, because I could see the ground, It was tailor-made for a complete assault team. I had to think about medevac. Should anybody be shot? How do we get them out? There was three little airfields there that I was thinking about how we could medevac from there. We knew where the guards were. We could see the guards on the gate and in various places. The main thing is I was concentrating on was the shape of the houses, how the houses were laid out, and how the stables were laid out, and the best place to attack it from. And above all, I looked for an area where the assault team would land. It was pleasing to the eye of a military person. And I said, this one's a go.
Peter studies maps.
I felt excitement at the challenge. Excitement at doing something that nobody else could achieve. Everything in my military career had led me to believe that this was my day.
Names are written on a piece of paper.
We needed a number of men, preferably special force types, who were capable and mentally prepared to take on this mission.
How many men are we going to use? We decided on 12. We can only go for the top guys.
Billy, it's Peter.
Lots of experience, combat proven, and who had the big balls to do this.
It's Dave, Dave Tompkins.
The selection process I had for the men was based on the fact that some of them had served with me before.
Ned.
Others were recommended by other people.
Yeah, I knew I could count on you.
And to be fair, none of them said no, they just said we'll come.
Alex Lennox, how are you?
In the beginning, Dave Tompkins called me.
Very well, my friend, been a long time.
Alex had been parachute regiment, 3-2 battalion, South African army.
Well, listen, I've got a very good job opportunity for you.
I was excited.
Good money, very good money.
I said, where is this?
Colombia.
I'm in.
Basically, come through Panama, do not come straight to Colombia. You know the drill.
In footage filmed by Dave Tompkins, a plane arrives in Cali. Then men carrying luggage walk out of the airport.
It looks like a Peruvian mountain goat, doesn't it?
They came in via circuitous routes, Germany, Argentina. It was security protocol.
Delivered personally, Dave.
We, with George, met them at the airport, and George again secured them all through the passport and immigration.
That's it, Jock. You look super.
Miami Vice.
So, right, straight out of Miami Vice. Chocolate and top.
Oh, yeah, it's gone off. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Where's your black masking tape?
By this time, George had acquired an apartment. Very spacious, very palatial. And everybody came there and we settled them in.
Brilliant, fabulous, well furnished. There was only one way in to it. That was by elevator. It had armed security. They supplied us weapons. So we all had weapons in case we got a surprise visit from anybody.
Okay, you've got it too happy about here. Today is a nice day. The sun is shining in Cali.
Dave's holding bundles of cash.
Here is a missionary to donate a few dollars to the poor. And that could be me because I'm fat.
I have ships coming.
We were on $5,000 a month. Plus expenses, plus food. But that was just a retainer.
I was on £1,000 a day.
A briefcase full of money, then Peter and another mercenary sitting on a sofa.
The next morning I got the guys together, gave them a quick brief. At this stage, we still hadn't told them that the target was Pablo Escobar. We didn't feel they needed to know at that time. And I emphasised, do not do any drinking whilst you're here.
Dave's video camera footage of the team partying and dancing.
I the most beautiful women in Latin America are in Cali. It's just, I mean, it's just unbelievable. And we've got 12 of us who was beginning to seduce us, you know, it really was, oh, everybody loves Cali. We love Cali. And we did.
Guys spent a week or so running around the clubs and social life and doing what guys do, making a nuisance of himself.
I went for a walk through Cali and I passed by a pub that was fairly open. I went, what the fuck? Ha! Two of my team were there. Ha!
Get up!
They were drunk.
You hit them. Get up!
Anywhere else it would have been a funny situation, but we could not afford to bring attention to ourselves. So I sent them back to the flat.
This is the riffraff's bedroom.
The next day, we stopped a week's wages off them.
$1,000 off you, $1,000 off you.
I said, also, you will do exactly as I tell you. So I went to the chemist and I got some stuff called Antibuse. And if you drink alcohol with it, you start vomiting. So I made them take Antibuse tablets.
Traffic and pedestrians on a street in Cali.
Cali is a small city, not used to seeing a lot of foreigners. And their presence was getting very noticeable in the city.
So I decided it's time to leave town.
The dense green jungle in Antioquia province, Colombia, on June the 3rd, 1989. A wounded Peter lies on his back and stares up at the foliage and the night sky above him.
We were 8,000 feet up. It was cold. Shivering cold. I was thinking about survival because I could have died. And it gives you time to mull over certain mistakes that you've made. I was soul searching.
He lies trembling and alone.
I thought about a number of things. My marriage wasn't going too well. Everything went through my head, you know, my childhood. Mother, father. I just wish there'd been a better husband and a better father to my kids. I was hurting a lot. And I felt my head was going to burst open.
Peter rolls onto his side and wraps his arms tightly around himself.
I was trained to kill by the army. But the fighting instinct came from no mean city, Glasgow.
A panoramic view of Glasgow, then an ominous building looming over a quiet street where Peter is walking.
I was brought up in Ridley, right next to Berlini Prison. My upbringing in Glasgow, it was hard and tough, but when you lived where I lived, with the people I lived with, it's natural. I never saw my father. I just heard about him.
A photograph of Peter's parents.
My dad was an extremely hard person. He was feared by a lot of people.
Peter's sister, Rose.
He was quite a tough man. Quite a hardy old man. He'd get himself into some scrapes, and I remember as a child seeing him, you know, there was a whole gang attacked him, and he had about 46 stitches in his head.
He was also absent, and I remember my mother said to me, "Your dad's home," and I remember distinctly he had a uniform on. I walked up to him and I said, "Hey, mister, are you my daddy?" Because I'd never seen him. And if you look up here, on the top right-hand window of Berlini Prison, my father used to be incarcerated there. And he'd put little things in the window, different colours, to tell my mother, you know, he either loved her, he was depressed, he was fairly happy, things were going well.
Mammy would be upset you know, at times, because my father didn't know how to sort of be with him. That's the only way I can put it. He never ever told any as he loved us anyway, you know.
Two men square up against each other.
I've seen my dad fighting on quite a few occasions. He got himself involved in a fight. I was very young at the time, and my father had been gay-throned as the local hard man with a guy called John Dorns. And old Miles, who was my grandfather, said, "We're not having this, you know, the family's been toppled." So he put my father on a training regime for the comeback fight. They exchanged blows, and it was fairly heated. They were really, both really going for it. It looked like something, you know, a movie. My father took a couple of smacks, but he bested John Dorans and eventually dropped him.
In a reconstruction, Peter's father knocks the other man down and stands over him with his fists clenched.
And my father used to beat me. He just hit me once, and all I saw was a load of stars. He broke my nose. It made me think that I can never let anybody beat me. I'd prefer to leave it alone if you could, you know?
A photo of Peter's father sitting at the kitchen table.
I think Peter wanted him to say to him, "You know, I'm really proud of you." But I don't think my father could say that. I don't think he was able to say that.
It made me a fighter. I found myself becoming more and more aggressive because I was moving up the food chain of the hard men.
Peter is walking.
I was trying to find something that I could channel my aggression into. I had to get out of Glasgow because Glasgow wasn't good for me.
Supporting himself with a stick, Peter keeps walking along the pavement. Dave's camcorder footage of the team at a neatly tended resort in Cali, Colombia, in April 1989.
Skinny one. Very nice. I love them shorts, mate.
Yeah, that is done. Tuna fucking orange. Look. My God, you're ugly close up.
He wants somebody to push him.
One of them sits on a kid's ride.
We needed a place to train, and we needed weapons. Obviously, we can't go around shooting in the streets. And eventually, they moved us to the place called Pennsylvania.
That was a beautiful ranch that the Cali cartel had.
There's Dave doing his daily exercise.
After a hard day, I'm having to relax.
Oh, we felt relaxed because you know that there's money behind you. 100 acres of mountaintop retreat. It had Chinese gardens, full-scale bowling alley, swimming pools, sauna, weight room, stables, horses, quad bikes, guard dog perimeters, guarded by his security guards at the front gate.
Evidence.
A cook, Martha, servants. It had an antenna for the television bigger than my house. You know, they could get a TV channel anywhere. You wanted to watch EastEnders?
It was out of this world. It was truly palatial. The most important thing about being up there, there were no pubs. You know, the drinkers suddenly realised it wasn't on anymore. And the guys started taking it serious then, and we started to train.
Go! Come on, boys!
We needed to be fit. An unfit soldier is a dangerous soldier. And we had plenty of that, but not enough fitness. So that really challenged the guys.
Press-ups, then a sprint.
We'd do basic para PT, natural fitness.
10 push-ups there, go, 10.
And we used to run around the running track every morning at 6 o'clock. bloody thing.
We were told there was weapons arriving and to be ready for them.
The weapons were obtained in the United States. They were smuggled into the country.
And we're getting all excited. We're psyched up to fuck, waiting on these things coming.
And then it was smuggled up in the back of a farmer's pickup truck that folded up and had a false bottom in the bottom, and all the weapons were in there. That's when the guys were like kids let loose in a sweet shop. Oh, fucking hell, here we go.
The weapons are laid out on a table.
There was a couple of Interdynamics, which is a small submachine gun.
We had M16s, AR-15s.
Anti-tank rockets.
SPAS 12 shotguns, machine pistols, Uzis.
29
Zulu grenades, 66 millimeter anti-tank Lawes rockets. 60 kilos of C4 explosives, anti-personnel mines, whatever we wanted.
It was like fucking Christmas. The whole thing has come together. Everything that we needed to assault, weapons-wise, was there.
Peter puts the team through a training exercise.
Now the weapons have arrived, it's become real, isn't it? And the training went into full swing.
I could see the mentality of the men switching. They were starting to come together. They were identifying with their team leaders. The team leaders identified with me. They suddenly realised that they were going to close with the enemy and kill them. Everything just seemed to be slipping into place that you get with a unit that's just started up, and everybody became a part of the little unit that we had.
Thin, wispy clouds over the mountain jungle in Antioquia province on the morning of June the 4th, 1989. Peter's still lying on his back on the forest floor with an overcast sky above him.
The second day, I just lay there, shivering cold.
He reaches for a flask.
And I was going through things, right? Have I got food? The water is taken care of. And I was planning in my mind, if help didn't come, how I could help myself, because I had escape money on me. And I formulated a plan, and I felt it would take me something like 8 days to get better. But did I have enough food to sustain me for 8 days? Did I have enough warmth? Did I have enough medical kit to keep myself going to try and kill the pain? I didn't.
After taking a cautious look over his shoulder, Peter rests his head on the forest floor, closes his eyes, and exhales wearily. A black and white photograph of Peter as a young soldier in his uniform.
The day I left the British Army, I just went to one side and I started crying. It was the worst thing I ever did in my life. I drifted from job to job. I just wasn't fitting in. And I just felt lost. And my aggression became worse. My idea of a good Friday night, you go in the pubs, get pissed, and have a good fight. It got to the stage in my life where I felt that disputes could be solved by violence. Irene was a girl I got involved with. It developed into arguments. And one day I hit her a slap in the back of the head. And before I knew where I was, to use Glasgow terminology, I was getting hobbled off by the police. I was charged with assault. And I got myself locked up in Gloucester Prison. I don't blame that lassie for what happened. I blame myself. I'm extremely sorry. The if I could meet the judge who sent me to prison, I'd walk up and shake his fucking hand.
Grainy footage of a hill silhouetted by the rising sun.
I was doing a lot of reflection. Where was I going to go from here?
Bombs dropped from a plane explode.
What experience I had from the Special Forces, I wanted to use it and test myself even further than I'd gone. Fortunately, there were plenty of places to go if you were seeking combat. I was a mercenary in Angola. I was a mercenary in the Rhodesian Army.
The Army training with weapons.
I was a mercenary in the South African Army.
An explosion, then a fireball.
In Rhodesia, every time we went out, we had some form of contact with the enemy.
Another massive explosion.
There was a thing called a black book. My name was in it. It said, a good, hard soldier. And that's who I consider myself.
At the secluded retreat in Cali, Colombia in April 1989, Peter is addressing the team.
The discipline that we are talking about as we are going to fight back, that is the fucking difference. Do you understand it? Honestly, guys, there is nobody can touch us. Together as a team, we can fucking take on four times our number. I assure you we can do it. Now, everybody in here has got a bit of trigger time under their belt, which is more than the Army's got. Keep it together, and realise that they cannot fucking do us. And I mean it. I am not creating this in my own mind. And if we can't convince ourselves that this is the case, we'd be as well gone home.
This is Hang. This is Ted Rush. Roy and myself. I had a tomato. Roy had a carrot. It's terrible here, and I'm doing it for the children.
Terry Tagney came to see me, and he sees my bottle's gone.
I'm shit scared. Whatever it is that you're doing, I just want to go home, mate.
They had no idea who the target was. We didn't tell them it was Pablo, in case, for security reasons.
I'm out. I'm sorry, mate.
I said to myself, if his bottle's gone, and we let him go, who's going to do it next?
I'll tell the boys that you've problems at home with the wife and you have to go home.
And the guy's turned around and says, he's a fucking liar. His bottle's gone.
Thanks, mate.
No worries.
The truth was, he wasn't up to it. He wanted to get out. And he was a security risk. That's what he was. And he should never have been let home until it finished.
So, gentlemen, you're probably wondering what you're doing here. Who the target is. Some of you might have guessed it right, some of you wrong.
In the end, we called them together and said, right, you're speculating on who the target is or what we're here for. Don't speculate anymore. This is the target. His name is
Pablo Escobar.
Oh, yeah.
The head of the Medellin drug cartel.
Great. How are we going to do him? At the last meeting I had with the cartel bosses, Chepi Londoño, who was one of the four, came to me and he said, David, bring me back Escobar's head and I'll give you $1 million for it. I said, yeah, all right.
I said to Dave, I'll cut his head off once he's dead, give you in a basket and you can get $1 million. I'll take $100,000.
And it would have been proof that he was dead if I brought him his head, wouldn't it?
From a briefcase full of money to a plane soaring above green fields and mountains. A photo of Peter looking out of the plane window.
I had a look at the situation and I said to myself, I think it's time to do another flight over the route into the target area.
A series of aerial photos of Escobar's ranch. El Ñangas.
La plata que gastaba Pablo en seguridad no tenía contadero.
The money Pablo spent on security is incalculable. $1 million per month just for himself.
En solo seguridad para él.
There were 80 men on the premises. We assumed There were 40 on duty and 40 resting.
Footage of Escobar's security. We had a security ring of about 50 or 60 men, armed to the teeth.
The ammunition they were carrying was 60 rounds per man, and it was submachine guns, which didn't have the range of what we had.
There was a lot of security with the weaponry we used. We used AR-15 rifles inside the hacienda.
Every one of the enemy, there should be three men for it. So we made up that numbers, we made it up in ammunition. The capacity of this ordnance was enough to fucking kill 2,000, 3,000 guys. Tactical-wise, we had the advantage. They were onto a loser, not us, because we had the firepower.
An aerial surveillance photo. We were far too prepared and disciplined. We were willing to give our lives for Pablo. For us at that time, Pablo was a god.
What I particularly liked was taking something from an idea, turning it into a plan, and implementing that plan. The aim is to close with the enemy and kill them. If you fail to plan, you plan to fail.
New evidence has emerged that British mercenaries are training gunmen for the drug cartels in Colombia. One mercenary has produced a videotape which he says shows former British and Australian soldiers at a secret Colombian training camp.
This man, Terry Tagney, sold NBC the pictures.
Terry immediately got back to Australia. The first thing he did was sell a story on what was happening in Colombia. He jeopardised the mission. He jeopardised the men who were his comrades there, but fortunately enough, didn't mention Pablo Escobar, because at that time he didn't know.
I don't know what British mercenary activity there may be in Colombia, though I've seen the rumours like everybody else. If there is any, then I thoroughly deplore it.
Why would the CIA or FBI or anything want to stop it when he was a target for the United States anyway?
When we heard about this plan, of course, we wanted him dead. So any effort to kill Pablo Escobar was, of course, welcomed. We wanted it to happen.
We got it, Dave? We got it.
I think they've adopted a suck-it-and-see policy. They're disposable. If they achieve it, fine. It's achieved an objective that suits us all. If they don't achieve it, we've lost nothing.
It was a need that they should maintain secretivity in the area. So one of the solutions was to move the whole group to the middle of the jungle.
Fine mist settles over the dense jungle in Antioquia province on June the 4th, 1989. With a large bloody gash over his eye, Peter sits up with a start and checks his surroundings.
I woke up, still no sign of any rescue. Pain at this stage, it hadn't subsided, but I was learning to live with it a bit more. And I had some of the beans that I had left. I just prepared myself to lie in wait until some form of help came. The other reason I did that was to try and get my body to repair itself, have an element of repair, should I have to try and walk out.
Peter tries to get to his feet.
There was a fear that Escobar's guys could come and get me. I was very aware of what could happen to me. I had decided if they came, I was going to take them with me.
2 months earlier, a plane carrying Peter, Dave and the rest of the team of mercenaries soars high above the clouds. Dave and another man smile for the camera Then he raises his middle finger.
They moved us to a place they called La Guagua. God knows what that means, the Jaguar or something.
The trip was quite an amazing trip. We went by a Dakota aircraft. It really was phenomenal.
The animated plane flies from Cali to La Guagua.
Give us a smile, sir.
The squad are on a cramped boat travelling along a river.
I'll bring it home for you, Billy, if I could.
But
I'm not allowed. Police won't let me.
The Colombian police?
No, the British police. The Colombian police won't mind.
This is the police.
Finally, he took us to the training area. It was obviously a cartel stopping ground, moving cocaine, stuff like that.
The group's headquarters at La Guagua is a wooden hut on stilts a short distance from the river.
The jungle accommodation was just a long hut, and it held us all.
Number 25 bus.
We set up camp and settled in there to begin another phase of training.
Here's Diver M60. There goes Alex.
It was just in the middle of nowhere.
There he is, he's finally got it.
It wasn't guerrilla territory that we knew of. We had no beds, no bedding.
It was on the side of a river, which meant, you know, there was no trouble bathing and keeping yourself clean.
What a sight!
And we just got on with the routine there.
The helicopters, one was parked behind us, two were over the other side of the river.
I'm about to change the colour of this United States of America chopper that has made its way here. It had landed all on its own, and we're going to respray it. Nice Colombian police green.
Historically, Pablo gave orders to his guys never fire on the military or the police. We had a tactical advantage. Approached the house low level, and their spotters would have said, it's police and military, because we've got military colours and we're in police logo, Policia Nacional all over our helicopter. We go into the grounds without being fired upon before somebody realised, fuck me, it's not the army. The shit would hit the fan then.
Heavy gunfire at night.
6 o'clock in the morning, get up. It was still dark.
Stop firing.
We did tactical training.
There was nobody around for many, many miles. We could fire weapons, fire rockets, drop bombs, and there was nobody to hear it.
When we were in the jungle, we had to do some serious, serious training, just in case something went wrong for the actual mission and they had to make their own way back. They were getting fitter. Every day they were training together, so you were getting that team spirit.
The $8 million men.
It takes a team to do the job, and the team gelled very, very well for the operation.
The squad leap out of a hovering helicopter.
We were out there practicing on a riverbed that we had, which was roughly the same size as the target. The men had yellow patches sewed onto the top of their balaclavas so as I could identify our own guys from the enemy.
We were given a very competent Colombian pilot who flew for the cartel on numerous operations.
One was called Pablo and the other one was called Tiger. And Tiger had an awful lot of police experience.
Tiger, he was a bit of a daredevil. He would zoom around through the river banks and clip the treetops. He seemed to want to get as close to them as possible.
The smaller of two choppers hurtles past the trees.
We just covered everything from A to Z.
The squad walk along the riverbank, firing their weapons.
The morale was sky high.
The training continues.
Watch me! Go back!
What I was trying to do in my mind was give those men the best chance they had of leaving that target alive.
As we're going around, the fire group will land at one end, while this one is still laying fire. To cover this, I prefer to keep one leg on the ground all the time.
We'd get together, we sat down the table, what we call a Chinese parliament. The men had an awful lot of input in that they were dealing with their lives.
This team will then land under the cover of these guys, so there's no chance of hopefully anybody shooting, because it'll be quite close.
Everybody felt it contributed. We put the final plan together, the ground, the situation, the mission, the execution, the admin and log. And that was it. After that, it's go.
The words Operation Phoenix are typed.
When you talk about a mission, you don't make it long-winded. You just say, ground, situation, mission. Our mission is to kill Pablo Escobar. The operation will be carried out in three phases. One, the flight from the jungle to the target.
One of the team fires his weapon.
I'm wondering, all of a sudden, helicopters come over, start machine gunning the place.
By the time I dropped 40 kilos of explosive around the place, I'd have been shell-shocked. One helicopter's got the assault group in, which are going to land first. Would have been 12 guys on the ground. Peter Mack up there with his jimpy and the gunship, so we had some air cover.
They would fan out. One group is the cover group. Phase two, the rest of them would start clearing the premises, working their way through. Action on the target.
You engage the target and you put enough rounds to put them down. Ba 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 ba.
The assault team's aim was to get into the house. Women and children were off the menu.
We had the area colour-coded.
White was the front, black was the back. And we numbered it 1, 2, 3 sections.
We knew which part of the house he resided in, which was in black one.
Once the house clearance team were in section one, we'd direct our fire to section two ahead of them. So we're clearing the way for them to move through the house to find Escobar.
Phase three, withdrawal from the target.
Target is down.
And we're taking Pablo's body to the helicopter.
Right, we've hacked his head off, so we've only got a bit of him to carry, because we're a bit overcrowded on the choppers. And eventually they'd have flown us back to Cali, and hopefully we'd all lived forever and a day and gone home.
In the reconstruction of the plan, Peter looks out of the window as the helicopter flies away from Escobar's compound. In Dave's footage, one of the team releases a large spider from a container.
You want me to make it jump?
Not at me.
Everything was ready to go. The men were ready to go. And it seemed to turn into a waiting game. And then a spanner landed in the works. A Sunday Times reporter by the name of James Adams had picked up on the actual mission and was threatening to print a story on it.
He was an ex-spook, or a spook at the time. He'd accessed flight information, and the mere fact that he got it shows that he wasn't just your average journalist.
He contacted someone who knew Dave, and we agreed to meet him in Panama.
We've got a story, very good story, and now I want you to contribute your side.
At the time, I was the defence correspondent of the London Sunday Times.
You don't have a story.
There is a story.
I was told by somebody in the US intelligence community that there were a group of mercenaries planning to kill Pablo Escobar, and they were led by this Brit called Dave Tompkins, and that was kind of it. So the rest of it, from my perspective, was all about bluff.
And we're ready to publish it.
Nice and bold. If you print that, you will jeopardise some lives that are here now. What are you doing now?
Don't mind your own fucking business.
Then the question was, well, how are we going to deal with this? And Dave clearly wanted the operation to go ahead. Fair enough. I didn't care whether he killed Pablo Escobar or not. So there was a bargain to be struck between what he wanted and what I wanted.
If you don't print until we tell you to, we will give you exclusive rights to the whole story.
What we said, let us do the operation and he could have the story at the end of it.
The exclusive, I think we can work with this.
And then I said to him, I have a good idea.
I will put you on the helicopter and fly you into the heart of the battle.
He declined.
I told the cartel that we had a security breach that could embarrass us. They said, right, we'll get him over here and we'll kill him or something. And I said, no, that can't happen.
I knew nothing about that at all. And I think Dave's a wonderful human being.
In La Guagua, on June 3rd, 1989, the squad advance across a patch of overgrown grass and fire their weapons.
We radio telephoned the Cali cartel. We said to them, we had better get a move on with this operation, otherwise it's not going to come off. Due to the world press getting on to what is actually happening here. If Pablo knows we're coming, we've got a problem.
A photo of Escobar. When a message is received by radio, a man grabs the handset and responds.
Los escucho fuerte y claro.
The radio burst into life, the message that came out of it in Spanish. Pablo is there now, round the swimming pool, having a meeting. Go now.
He's there. Go, go.
Vale. Vale. Phoenix is a go. Phoenix is a go.
When we had him in position, we said, let's go for it.
They were all there, got their kit, boom, 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 check mine, I'm out. Okay, gun, helicopters, helicopters.
The squad's helicopters, one of them in Colombian police livery, fly just above the ground.
I was so psyched up. People talk about fear. Fear was out of the question because we'd conquered it.
Both helicopters are in the air.
We've been training for 11 weeks to go and get this guy and do the business on him.
Gliding over the jungle, then an animated map of the squad's journey from La Guagua to the Hacienda. Dave flicks a cigarette out of one of the helicopters.
The flight was nothing special. I smoked a couple of cigarettes, making sure I didn't set light to the bombs.
We were flying low, about 200 feet, and there was a reason for this. The radar operators belonging to the military were on the payroll of the person that we were about to take out.
Dave's in the police chopper as it flies over the thick green jungle canopy.
I'm concerned for my safety. I just want to do what we're trained to do, get it over with, get the money and go home.
Squad member Alex Lennox looks out of the window of one of the helicopters.
On the helicopter, Pete Donnelly looked at me, he shaked his head as if to say, this is not good, Alex. The first time in my life, in that helicopter, I prayed to a God I never believed in, never spoke to. I said these things, if you're real, protect us.
The helicopters approach brooding mountain peaks with clouds gathering above them.
As we were flying towards the target, I noticed there was heavy cloud over the top of the Andes. I said to myself, maybe the pilots know what they're doing here. They'll lift above the cloud and go over.
I saw Pete's helicopter quite regularly, but there was a time when we had to split. We were heading on for the refueling.
On the animated map, one of the choppers speeds up and heads for the refueling area, a short distance from Hacienda Nápoles. The police helicopter flies into thick cloud.
Seems a bit choppy, mate.
I could see that we were in some problems, that I couldn't see anything, so I know the pilot couldn't see anything either, because we were in a cloud.
Heavy enveloping mist.
I didn't feel right about it. I turned around to Dave and the men in the back. I said, Dave, get yourself in the crash position. It was instinct.
Get the crash position! Get the crash position! Back!
I turned myself back. We hit the trees. And the helicopter turned over. The blade came through the cab of the helicopter. And we started bouncing through the trees upside down.
I'm frightened out of my skin and I want to go home.
Helicopter comes crashing down into the dense mountain jungle. Peter grimaces in pain as he crawls on his belly along the leafy forest floor, with blood trickling down his cheek from the cut above his eye. Panting, he struggles forward, then he breaks down and begins to sob.
The pain I had was excruciating. Every time I breathed, there was pain.
I'm sitting there, waiting to get out of the cloud, and I wake up, like from a dream. And I'm huddled in the corner of the helicopter, which is on its side, and nobody is in there bar me, as far as I'm concerned. I know I'm smothered in claret, my head hurts like a bastard, and I wanted to put my hand up, and all I had pictured in my mind was my hand was going to go in this fucking hole into my brain, so I didn't touch it. And then it clicked the bombs. I don't know what damage it's done to the timers. When it goes up, it would have took half the mountain with it. And I found the satchel charges, cut all the fuses off of them so they couldn't go. One of them, the time pencil, had broken, actually. So I was very lucky.
In the reconstruction, Dave sighs with relief.
And I fought my way through breaking branches, anything, to get out of that helicopter. I suppose it was sheer survival panic. And I thought, fucking right, that's me out.
Don't worry, we're close.
Peter, you alright?
Yeah.
Then I see Peter and the other two staggering out of the woods, and Peter was hurt.
Dave.
Okay.
I can get morphine in the veins have collapsed.
I said to Dave, pass me down a drip. I can't move. I just drank the drip, squeezed it in my mouth and drank it.
Right, lads, find him something warm.
But there was no pilot. Where's Tiger? So I got back in the aircraft.
I saw that. Look at me. Look at me, Tiger.
And I called his name Tiger and he mumbled, mi pierna, which means my leg. He had been hit what I assumed was the helicopter blade. Now, I run down his legs, and they were still on.
I'll get you some morphine, mate. I'll get you some morphine.
I tried to get a drip in his arm, and his veins were flat. I couldn't find a vein. I went to this arm, and it was filleted from the shoulder to his wrist, as though a butcher had opened it up to the bone, and there was no blood. He was mortally wounded.
Dave puts a comforting hand on Tiger, but he's motionless. In the present, Dave sits for a moment in silent contemplation, his face tinged with regret. At the crash site in the mountains, Dave's speaking into a walkie-talkie.
Down to Mike. Over. We have crashed. Pilot's dead. Need immediate evac.
We found out that they'd crashed. So that became an abort.
Oh, fuck!
Good lad.
Peter was in a bad way. His hand was smashed, his ribs were smashed, his legs were fucked, and he couldn't do much. In fact, I took some photographs of him. He's sort of collapsed on the deck.
A blurry shot of a wounded Peter lying on the ground.
Flacco had wounds and bits from trees, I suppose, and glass. Mario was fine. I had my busted head, which turned out to be a tiny little wound that just decided to bleed a lot. When the helicopter located us, it hovered about 60, 80 feet above us, but this is rough, rugged, trees and bushes everywhere, nowhere to land.
Come on.
All right.
Go.
Dave and I decided for them to go down, try and get help and bring someone back to me to get me out. Because I was smashed up fairly badly.
Gotcha. Shit.
Right, I'm gonna get help, son, all right? Okay, I'll be as quick as I can.
We wrapped him up, we got all the medical packs, bandages, and we packed it round him so that he could be able to stay warm because it was cold up there.
Peter lies back with his eyes closed.
And when he left, I suddenly realised I'd broken a rule of combat survival. One man should have stayed with me. But it never dawned on me at the time. I just says, I'll be okay.
Dave's photo of a bloody and bruised Peter on the ground. Alex.
Let's just say, what are we going to do? First thing was the concern of Dave, helicopter, Peter. And then the modus operandi is survival. In the area of Pablo Escobar.
That day I was inside the house with Pablo. I will never forget that day. We were celebrating our victory of Nacional in the Copa Libertadores without ever leaving our positions as security people for the boss. Walking quietly through the jungle.
You're trying to push your way through. It's thousands of years of overgrown stuff. Mario Flacco pointed out to me that there was a stream flowing from the top of the mountain. So they went off to try and find a way down below. And it was getting dark. 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in Colombia, it was pitch black.
I had no sense of time. My watch had broken. I was judging the day by the amount of light. I crawled about. I searched for food. And I lay there, shivering cold.
Trembling in the dark, Peter takes a drink of water.
I was frozen to the bone, and I could imagine Peter up there, fucking 8,000 foot up, dead body, can't move very well. He's a friend, a very, very good friend. And I care for him like I'd care for my son. I was never going to leave him. You know, we'd have moved heaven and earth to have get him down that mountain, dead or alive.
Peter checks his rifle, then he lies on his back and groans in pain with the pitch black night sky above him. After we realized that we had been sent an attack, but fortunately the helicopter had crashed, we were surprised because we thought we were untouchable people at that time. We were sent to do a search of the area. Escobar's men in the jungle.
That morning, after I spent the night on the mountain away from Peter, I heard people coming up. Everything in that Triunfo area is controlled by Escobar anyway.
With Escobar's armed guards searching nearby, Dave hides in the undergrowth.
Ni vivos ni muertos.
Dead or alive, they had to be totally eliminated. Peter readies his gun.
If Pablo would have caught me, I would have had a terrible, long, drawn-out, painful death.
He holds his rifle to his chest.
La orden del patrón.
The boss's order was to search all the hotels for foreign people from outside of Medellin, especially the Europeans and people from Cali. We were questioning them, and if we weren't satisfied, they would die. A lot of people died here in those hotels. Pointing his rifle, Dave stalks through the jungle.
I heard people thinking it's our guys. I called out.
Compas, primera.
Señor, señor.
Eventually, we reached the bottom.
The mountains, thick with green foliage and shrouded in mist. His face bloodied and bruised, Peter jumps awake with a look of panic and dread on his face. Grabbing his gun, Peter tries to move, but he grimaces and groans in agony.
It's day three. I woke up. At this stage, the pain was so bad, I started sort of hallucinating. You know, and seeing things, looking at some of the people who I'd associated with in life.
Photos of Peter in his youth.
In the early days of my youth, and through to the middle part of my life, I did carry an awful anger within me. There was a bit of guilt. I felt a lot of the anger may have come from my father.
I'm sorry, Dad. I'm sorry.
I have an awful lot of regrets. And none of them are in the soldiering side of my life.
A photo of Peter standing next to his wife.
I regret it in the fact that I had a woman who was a good wife. She was very supportive of me. She followed me along through thick and thin. And I took her loyalty to the wire. I wasn't a good father, but I do love my kids. Due to the way I was, my character, my violence, my aggression, I failed at these things. A dirty, low-down scumbag of a man, eh?
Peter sits for a moment in thought.
This will. God, this will.
And being a Catholic.
I promise. I promise, God, no more.
I tried to make a deal with God. And I said to myself, God, get me out of this, and I'll always be a good boy afterwards.
In the reconstruction, Peter's breathing slows and his eyes roll up into his head. The overcast sky and the trees above him begin to blur and fade. Suddenly, a gunshot rings out and he sits up.
I heard the gunshot, but it was in the far distance. And then I heard voices.
He clicks off the safety on his weapon.
And the voices started coming closer. And I said, I've got to prepare myself for the inevitable. And I sat there with my weapon. I said, I'll let them get on top of me, and I'll take as many as I can with me. At the same time, I would be killing myself. As it came closer and closer and closer, I could eventually see movement. One man came, so I shoved the machine gun in his stomach.
Tranquilo, amigo. Soy el coronel Ricardo.
He went, amigo, amigo, Colonel Ricardo, which was one of the code words that we had. I then knew that I was in the hands of friendly forces.
Viene, ya viene rescate.
And he says, we're going to take you down.
No problem.
And I was still in a state of bad repair. I said, how long will it take? They said, 8 hours.
While mist shrouds the brooding mountain, Peter's Colombian ally hacks at the trunk of a tree with a machete.
They chopped down a long, thin tree. It was nothing to them, they just seemed to do it naturally. Loaded down a re-entrant, tied a rope round my shoulders, and they slid me down this tree.
Strapped to the tree, Peter grimaces in pain as the men bring him down.
And we moved along, and they did that all the time, down waterfalls, re-entrance. I was in immense pain.
The men pull Peter through the jungle on the tree trunk.
We kept on and on and on. How far is it? 4 hours. How far is it? 4 hours. And the pain was just... I felt it was killing me.
His face bruised, bloodied and battered, Peter grits his teeth as he's hauled down the mountain.
There was a mental pain there. And it was, right, you've done this wrong. At this given time, you can't put any of it right. You can only put it right if you keep yourself alive, get yourself out of here and get back to the UK.
The trunk bumps along the forest floor.
There was a dark side to my character, but I found that an awful lot of the anger, it started subsiding. Everything seemed to come to me. There was a clarity that I've never known before. I think it was starting to bring me to terms with an element of reality. I felt a sense of peacefulness, and I got to the bottom where I had to stand up and walk.
The men help Peter to stand and walk.
And every step I took, it was just pain like I've never known in my life. But I knew that at least I'd been rescued and I had a chance of staying alive, so it perked up morale.
Peter's two Colombian rescuers have their arms around him as they emerge from the jungle. The relief on Peter's face is palpable as he looks up and spots a helicopter in the sky above them. A photo of Peter's bare back riddled with cuts and bruises.
I flew into Cali. I walked into the bathroom in the mirror. Every part of my body was covered in bruises. I had 4 broken ribs in the front, 4 in the back, and there was quite a bit of internal bruising, but not enough to kill me. I lay in bed and thanked my higher power that what happened to me, I should have been dead, and I was still alive.
Everybody's there to look after the guy next to you. Peter was the team leader, you know. He was an important and integral part of that operation. He's fearless, he's brave, he's loyal, and people have a great deal of respect for Peter. He is the ultimate Special Force soldier.
There was a disappointment. We'd failed. You know, you can look at it, a mountain got in the way, but the fact is, we hadn't achieved the mission. And I knew, even within my heart and soul, if we'd have got over that mountain, there would have been no Pablo Escobar.
The SAS insignia, a sword wreathed in flames with the motto, "Who Dares Wins," hangs on a wall in Peter's house. Peter's many service medals are on display inside a glass box with a wooden frame. Wearing reading glasses, Peter sits at a table by the window and writes in a notebook with a pencil.
My physical state now is I am in constant pain. I've got diabetes. I have arthritis in every joint in my body. But mentally, spiritually, I feel fantastic.
In a large church full of empty pews, Peter slowly makes his way along the aisle towards the altar.
I stopped drinking about 7 years ago. And then, when I stopped drinking, I found there was an awful lot of space in my mind. I feel that being a churchgoer filled that space. The aggression seemed to subside. It got less, and it got less, and it got less.
Candles burn in the church as Peter bows his head.
My brother Peter is a good man. He's got a kind, warm and generous heart. Could be aggressive, but I think he was hurt with the way things were. I'm proud of his achievements of how he's managing his life even today because of problems that he's had. If anybody else has got anything different to say about him, that's their opinion. But I know him as my brother, and I know him as the man.
A photo of Peter with his arms around his son and daughter.
I love being loved. And when I say that, I don't mean in a female sense. I just mean with my friends, my relatives, and above all, my children.
A more recent photo of Peter with his teenage son.
If I hadn't have been through all those things in life, the fights, the shortcomings that I had, crashes in helicopters, break up of marriages, if I hadn't have had them, I couldn't have been where I am today. It's just like everything had burned out. There was nothing left except to live a good spiritual life.
Peter sits in the church with his hands clasped.
What I can say is I learned a lot on the side of the Andes. It was the beginning of me growing up.
He looks up at a crucifix.
And eventually, I came to terms with a guy called Peter MacLeish.
A black and white photograph of Peter in midair, high above the ground, with his arms outstretched and a parachute pack on his back. After Colombia, Peter MacLeish never returned to frontline combat. He later worked as a security consultant in Algeria and Iraq, before retiring in 2008. Peter now lives alone in Birmingham, England. In 1991, Dave Tompkins embarked on another attempt to kill Pablo Escobar. He aborted the operation but was later arrested by US authorities for attempting to import a fighter jet into Colombia. He served 3 years in a Florida prison. Dave is now retired and lives in England with his wife. Whilst on the run from the authorities, Pablo Escobar was shot dead by the Colombian police in 1993. His former home, Hacienda Nápoles, is now a children's theme park.